persons for capable of thinking and coming. Now the Soviets will not let a person be Cuban diplomatically. They do not do that. I don't know, I doubt the Chinese do either. I happen to know Soviets do not let any person come in and out of their country without search. I don't care how high the sun is. But America, last I heard, had no such policy.
Yes, sir. I just read this comment that they caught a Colombian diplomat with some cocaine. They must have had a tip.
Yeah. Yes, I read the same. I read some similar story. But you're a diplomat, a lawyer, an ambassador, they don't stop him. They won't stop him. He flies in without being searched. And if you can carry an atomic bomb in a suitcase, it's dismantled. You know how to do it. The Chinese have that expertise. I don't know if you heard it down the road. That makes it difficult to want to think about when the world revolution is going to be uniting all the nations.
Yeah.
I'm a very realistic thinker.
If somebody would even, you know, really care about that type of crap.
What?
I said, if someone would really, you know, care about that type of stuff, about, you know, a world revolution.
When Benjamin will come along, in the name of communism, now and then, and get part of this bullshit. Which has a half-life of whatever the hell it is, I've forgotten. Half-life of 50,000 years or something like that. Which staggers your goddamn mind. You say, it's better than starving to death. A terrorist any day is going to get a hold of some of these bombs. Of course, a very mild-mannered socialist has one. So a terrorist gets a hold of it. He don't give shit for nothing. He's upset and angry. He's ruled by his emotion. Mad. That's a vengeance predominant. Anyway, it'll be a hell of a fiasco.
Well, Mr. Nicholson going to help him meet him to get ready. He said that if the water thing goes along with him, I think I'd start out in the first. But the water group was around to him, so he was showing what started coming on him. But that ammunition had blew it up.
The one thing we won't bother about Guyana, that's a damn cinch. If the nuclear fireworks breaks out, they won't be anywhere around the promised land.
Is it conceivable that one nation will could use the bomb and against another nation, and that's where it would end? It would be retaliation of any sort from other parts of the world. Is that a possibility, or does it necessarily mean that once it's used?
Socialists are very benevolent about life, but if they were attacked by captors, there's no way they're going to let their nation go down and let that capitalist nation not face retaliation.
And obviously the reverse would happen.
The capitalists are so aggressive and so selfish that they would, there's no question that they would retaliate.
So if there's no question about this, I mean, why would one nation initiate it, knowing that there is going to be retaliation and destruction of their own nation? Just the mentality
is bluff. I've seen many a fight start from a bluff. I've seen many rumbles start that didn't intend no rumble to happen. But you just go to a point where you can't control it.
I tried to get our people out in Canada. Only my meditating in 1963 prevented a nuclear assault. I tried to get them out of South America. I tried to get them out. Because eyeball to eyeball, I mean, it was just like what the magazines and the newspapers called it, eyeball to eyeball confrontation. Kennedy was a fool. Because Khrushchev had to be the bigger man than he is. And yield and thus lose his job. And he may look like a fool. He set up a provocative situation in which he had to retreat. Fortunately, Khrushchev had a lot of character. Because they were on the hotline to each other. They didn't have a hotline there, but they were on the telephone to each other. Kennedy says, you pull those chips back or we blow your ass out. So many words. Missiles that all the men were out of the silos setting up glistening. They were already on the Soviet side too. El Mundo, all the magazines, La Prensa, the different magazines that I read, at least in Brazil, because I sat down and tried to get people, maybe they moved their ass to South America that far back, because nuclear hell. And I was there and part of my people in America. And everybody was going crazy. The Brazilians were running everywhere. Saying, you goddamn Yankees, you goddamn Yankees. You're gonna blow up the world. It's enough. You blow up your own stupid self. But you stupid sons of bitches, you want to get everybody else blown up too. And that was a close one, I'm telling you. Because Kennedy said he'd use those missiles if those destroyers didn't turn back. Bringing the payload, the warheads. The missiles were already installed. The destroyers were coming with the payloads. And he met them, you know, over the boardstock, blockade. He said, you will pass that blockade, and we had it. Well, for several hours, those destroyers kept on coming. Khrushchev stopped them so many yards away from the blockade. And Khrushchev couldn't help but his officer knew that he was going to be mortified with his own people, mortified with his own general staff. Whoever backed up would be the loser. That's a maniacal kind of play. The trouble is with nuclear warhead. It isn't a nuclear warhead. It's not the nation that decides it. It's a president. It's an executive that decides it. Mm-hmm. One man decides it. A whole nation might, you might have some balanced reason if you go to Congress and had some time to think it through. You had ironclad security measures which you could not go off by accident. And you had enough consultation, you'd have reasonable people. If you got one fucker making the decision, like you do in the United States, the President of the United States decides nuclear war. This old business that we got a democracy and a war is declared is a bunch of bullshit. There is no such thing anymore. War's not declared. The President lifts up a little red telephone and gives a verbal signal.
You get some Jesus honky up there that believes in them, but the blue-eyed, blonde-haired racing. Shit, what the hell?
Or even the damn science.
Yeah.
It's unfair to go up Jerusalem. That is, you know, how you know you got two Zionists in the same silo somewhere.
Why did Cuba allow the missiles to be placed there, or did they have any choice?
Cuba was very wise to want the missiles there. America had tried to destroy them with the Bay of Pigs. CIA had tried to assassinate Castro on previous occasions. Cuba was sitting up. So they wanted the missiles there to protect their ass. Because this is one way the missiles could strike any city as far north as Detroit. And with those missiles there, the goddamn pirating raids and assassination attempts might stop. Cold War's cooled down, warmed up or whatever. Cooled down, we should say. Some up in those days. Those were terrible days. If I had been Castro, I believe I would put the missiles there too.
They just slipped them in more carefully, that's all.
Yes, had them installed ready. But it's hard to beat those new two planes in their aerial photography, which you probably know more about than any of us. It's just such a damn precision. They can get a bird turd in his ass when he's up flying up in the stratosphere.
That's what made his mistake. He built the missile sites and had the missiles all up before he got the payloads in.
Payloads, I think, you have a negotiating point. Although we were fanatically foolish, we were fanatical about Cuba. And we're not going to allow no goddamn missiles that close at home. You know, the Russian submarines can still strike from the sea, but we are the one that has more submarines. The capitalistic nations, the aggressive nations, have the more war, the aggressive war technology. So America felt fairly sure that Russia could just demolish us. But with all those missiles in Cuba, America was doomed. From the Rocky Mountains east, there was no way America could come out without having all of her cities destroyed. From Cuba alone, we have no effective anti-ballistic missile system. We're not interested in our people. Only people who are people-oriented have anti-ballistic missile systems. That's why Russia has it, underground shelters. Capitalists only give a shit. All they care about is attacking, killing, brutalizing. So America has gone way out in the deep end with far more weapons of mass destruction than the Soviets. The Chinese, of course, they're new in the field. They're hardly in the ballpark. But the Russians have always based upon the moderate number of aggressive weapons of mass destruction and put a greater emphasis, as you said, on anti-ballistic technology. But America doesn't put any money in anti-ballistic missiles. We have nothing going that way. All of ours is in dirty bombs. Khrushchev cleaned up their bomb before we lost great leader. Khrushchev knew how to set off the goddamn biggest bomb that ever been set off. He set off 100 megaton. We this day don't know how to make a 100 megaton bomb. Mm-hmm. Khrushchev set off a 100 megaton bomb, but encased the son of a bitch with lead, which reduced its megatonage, its explosive impact, but reduced the fallout to only 1% of what our 25, what our 5 megaton warhead has. He took the pains and set the son of a bitch off in Siberia, as you remember, and they saw it all over Europe. He set it off at night. He's a strategist. He said, "You fucking capitalists better wake up now." Because he wasn't using nuclear terror. He was reacting to nuclear blackmail. Because America was doing all the shitty stuff in Europe. They tried to mess with Czechoslovakia and destroy his very front alliances. They're messing in Poland. They're constantly causing disruption in East Germany, you know, in Berlin. So he said, remember when he called? He was a key to character. He said, look out there. I don't want all of you to glue your eyes on Siberia about 4 o'clock this morning. But I want you to watch out there. The fuckers in Berlin saw the bomb go off. Saw the flash change. That the power of it going off in the night.
See, one thing with
it had a startling effect. He was a brilliant, he was brilliant. Had a startling effect. Some provocative action stopped.
Do they have the 100 megaton now?
They got so many 100 megatons because they're thick.
After World War II, they got the solid. See, there were two groups of scientists in Germany. One was at Wernher von Braun making liquid fuel, and the Soviets got the solid fuel people.
They did.
And the United States does not know. That's why when you see these photographs in the magazine of the Soviet, new Soviet missiles, it scares the piss out of the Americans, because the United States does not know how to make those solid fuel missiles. All they can make is a little Minuteman. And the Soviet Union missiles, the solid fuels can be launched faster, and they go more accurately, and they carry a heavier payload, and they get there quicker. The Soviet Union has the United States stripped out all to hell in missiles, but they have fewer. They don't put the emphasis on, you know, like the dirty bombs and trying to. But as far as efficiency goes, they knock the shit out of them.
I think I'm going to take some 79, but Sam's digestive disturbance.
If it's possible to win, nuclear war.
Well, the Soviets decided that their strategy was until counterforce came. They decided that they'll place 100 megaton bombs and I forgot what the altitude was, so many thousands of feet. And they had placed, I think they figured they'd place about 30 of the damn things. If you place a 100 megaton bomb over Los Angeles at 30,000 feet, you blow out Bakersfield and you can go clear up the president. You start incendiary fires as hot as the sun in a few seconds. So we said that's all the hell they could do. Because they were being wiped out in World War II. They were made laid waste from Moscow to the Polish border. And they were behind us in technology, and the goddamn Yankees started pushing around right off. The World War II didn't stop until we were ready to start something with the Russians right off. Russia is our best friend. We used her to whip Germany. She whipped Germany single-handedly. Russia is what turned the German army. We didn't turn the German army. Soviets turned her at Stalingrad. Marshal Stalin out in Moscow fighting with his M1.
And pushed him back to Germany.
And Leningrad holding out for 931 days, or whatever. Leningrad not only holding out, but surrounded. Mm-hmm. No way to get food in, no way to get water in, no way to get nothing, and they eat their own dead. The Soviets were so dedicated that they ate their own dead and still would not surrender to the Nazi army. Now that shows the superiority of the system. You surround an American city for 2 days, and the Americans would surrender to whatever the shit there was there.
That's true, they would.
That shows you who believed in what they were doing. Leningrad never surrendered. That was the city of the namesake they found. That city meant too much to them. I'm sure Jonestown could be surrounded and defeated in quicker time. You know, it takes a lot of discipline to get that kind of commitment. But they had it. That's one of the wonders of history, and one of the radiant signs of communism, that it will bring that kind of devotion. And they can say all they want to under Stalin, and now Stalin's here, and Stalin was austere, and he was a tough dictator of the proletariat. But by God, he had no control over Leningrad. He was cut off. They didn't have to be loyal to Marshal Stalin. But they stayed loyal. So Stalin must not have been all that bad. Because they could have surrendered to Germany very easily. They never wanted to negotiate. It caused Hitler to have one of his first strokes. I think his first stroke was when he came at the Leningrad line. He looked at the plain view of Leningrad and says, I want to crush this city. 30 days later, they hadn't got any. He hadn't got a foot further towards Leningrad, and he had a stroke over.
And the old people and children just marched on the army with pitchforks.
That's Stalingrad. Communism superior.
Stalin was always one of the most courageous of all of the revolutionaries.
Oh, he was courageous.
Robbed trains and used to do. What did he do? Single-handedly jump onto the train and stop it and all kinds of stuff. And then when during the revolution...
Now, when Moscow looked like it was about to fall, go out in the midwinter by God, with nothing but the major weapons were lost. And he goes out with a goddamn rifle and leads the troops shooting at Nazis. That shows he had no coward. Hitler sure didn't get his ass on the front line. And you see these captain's dogs like Hitler and Nixon. They ride around in million-dollar cars, double-plated and triple-plated. Shit. Marshal Stalin was out in the streets. He was in street warfare in the Moscow suburbs. But then when the break came, they were about to take Moscow. Stalingrad was completely devastated.
And again, you see, people living in a dictatorship don't fight that way. They didn't have to fight that way. There was an army, it was done. People just come up with their own creativity and get the goddamn pitchforks and clubs. A few young that they had, they said, you stay back here with the guns. They didn't, the young couldn't make those old people march. They wouldn't have enough guns left. They were wiped out, cut out from their supply. And America always played a dirty game with Russia. We sicked Hitler on Russia, set up Russia to be destroyed. Then Hitler got ambitious. So Churchill, after he made public statements that we can be very grateful to Adolf Hitler, he will stop Bolshevism, which is a word for communism. We will stop, we'll be grateful to Adolf Hitler. Adolf called him a very affectionate word, I forgot what it was. Reich Chancellor, our friend, the Reich Chancellor. We can be grateful to him. He's going to stop Hitler. So they set up Germany with all these corporate multinationals. Set up Germany, Ford and all of them invested in Germany. Set up Germany to stop Russia. They invented Hitler. Then when Hitler turned on them, that's the only way captains do. They can't predict. Mm-hmm. They're all ambitious for their own self. But even after Hitler turned on them and necessitated us working with Russia, we always hesitated to give Russia much equipment. All during the war years, they were extremely slow to give Russia the kind of fighting weapons that she needed.
But even still, they had superior weapons. They had the most superior tanks of anybody. The Stalin tank couldn't be touched by even the largest German tank.
That was amazing, too, because here these people have been living in the feudal stage. 1919 to 1918, when the revolution came, Russia was living back like people lived in the cave days. And then hard to get their damn selves organized, and then the Germans would cap those sick Germans on Lenin, you know. Goddamn Germans invaded Russia right at the time of the revolution. So in 1918, 1919, they're fighting a war where they hardly got the revolution won. Then, by God, 19 years later, son of a bitch, and the Germans are set up again by the capitalists. Yeah, in this country, it's hardly had time to industrialize. And yet, as you say, they made the most superior tank of that period. That shows the superiority of the communist system. And if you people listen to this and talk about it after I'm gone, because very little listening done when I'm present, or anybody present, it takes double, triple, and quadruple exposure. But if you think of some of those patterns of history, you'll know which side's right.
Mm-hmm.
Any nation that can dig from the caves, again, the same kind of shit that China had, all these different dialects. There were no United Soviet Socialist Republics. There's 16 or 17 now. It was 19 now. All Russia was divided into different provincial states with a goddamn king. So Russia had it. And here came a revolution and united all those Slavic people with all their different languages, made them speak one, not made them, caused them to desire to speak one language and reveal one leader.
Mm-hmm.
And they're hard to get the goddamn people fed till the capitalists, and the capitalists were setting them up all along too. Frozen out in 1929 and an economic boycott, economic maneuvers as well as the outright military maneuvers. But in 20 goddamn years, those people were able to build up enough of a defense system to defeat Nazi Germany. And Nazi Germany had been equipped as no nation has ever been equipped in our history. It's a warfare state. One lucky blow, one lucky thing. Luck, miracles happen. If Hitler had not stopped Wernher von Braun in his rocket, if Hitler did it and he hadn't stopped the nuclear science, because he thought this was, I forgot what he called it, makeshift dreaming. If they got their science going, they got the nuclear bomb. Our asses would all be sitting under Nazi tyranny. Because he used it. He dropped it all over the goddamn world. Anything to save his empire.
Why did he stop?
Because he was a nut. He wasn't technologically aware.
But didn't he think... What was he thinking? Did he think that Von Braun would it be a waste of time to develop something?
People got very paranoid in the last days. He thought they were scientists were undependable, and they were apolitical. He thought they were wasting lots of money. The German nation was falling. There's a lot of money going to be siphoned off into these goddamn schemes of scientific schemes. So Hitler made the mistake of thinking that they were just playing with some other kind of fool idea. That's the danger of dictatorships. That's the danger of having a dictatorship. Even in the proletariat, they won't listen to nobody. If I were a dictator of the people, and I didn't listen to nobody, that's very dangerous. Hitler fucked himself because he wouldn't listen to nobody. He made decisions. He made dumbass decisions. He made some wise ones, but he made some dumbass decisions. When he attacked France and marched through the Marginet line in days, he crumbled the hopes of the Western world. Marginet line was supposed to stop anybody, and Hitler walked over it like it was tissue paper. He went right up to the Straits of Britain, and then he got this goddamn Nordic thing in his head. I don't want to attack the British because they're two Nordics. You know, superstition. This stupid son of a bitch, he just run right on over to attack Britain and took over Britain. No, he gets right at the edge of Britain and opens up another front against Russia. That's fool. Two fronts. He would never open up two fronts. Napoleon ought to talk to somebody something, not attack Big Mother Russia. For Napoleon, as we all hear, we met his Waterloo. He spread his army out in Russia and he froze his ass off. And that's exactly what Russia did to Hitler again. Even though it was done under the Tsar then, and then you got communism on the side of the Russian people, it was even worse this time.
But you know, the socialists stopped him on those missiles in a way too, because they had the heavy water plant. They didn't know how to make the generator like the, what do you call it? Whatever it is, a reactor like they had in the States made with carbon rods, and the heavy water was expensive, and there was
in Norway.
Yeah, Norway, and four or five of the Soviets and Norwegian socialists. Yeah, and they had, it was really crazy. They had to go through and climb underneath miles and miles of going through lines, and went in there and killed themselves in the process.
You're right. He may have. And that may have been the turning point. He may have let the sinus go on, but it hadn't been for that. But that created a hell of a problem for him. Then he just stopped it all. He just wouldn't fund it.
And then
that's tetracycline. You got a serious problem?
No, I was just trying to get some medicine. I've been looking at bottles of medicine all day. Every time I see one, I pick it up and see what it is.
Yes, Les.
I just saw. The movie Dr. Zhivago, and it showed
damn propaganda film.
They showed it here.
That's what we heard, but was able to see some of the insights of their revolution over there, some of their struggle by knowing the other side.
If you're smart enough, as you are, to read between the lines, but
yeah.
It's the greatest propaganda damn film you ever saw against communism.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We were watching the movie.
You might take a little more than meat, David. So I haven't been eating all day. So. Is there any of the bread I might try over there too?
Yeah.
What'd you say, Les?
We were watching the movie on their side. It had his a love affair in the story, but the people,
yeah,
how they
asshole.
Went through their struggle and stuff, how it showed him.
Why in the hell does a socialist nation have Dr. Zhivago?
Could Owen Burns I don't think he's a fool. I think he just doesn't have that much. He's sort of just he was in the right place at the right time. He just went along with it. It's a matter of circumstance.
He was, you know, the closest. He was the closest ally of Jagan, PFP. Jagan swore by him, and Burnham went to Russia, traveled to various communist councils. I found him almost with the jail, didn't I? How's the end of his history?
I don't know. When we were here 16 years ago, the struggle was going on. I didn't know much about it.
Jagan was in control then.
Yeah, I know he was. But Burnham
was
in
my
mind.
Yes, the black leaders were undermining Jagan's progressive government.
Real.
And it was a good government. It was a very good government. Jagan's government was a good government. I was here. I much would have preferred living under Jagan.
The British
were still here too. Yeah, they were here, but Jagan was making changes, you know, the colonialists. But I went to the black paper, the Chronicle, and they printed a story on us on the front page. Someplace back there read this story about me preaching at Presbyterian Church. My black family. Praises to high heavens. I don't know when they got that far back. I doubt they got the copy that far back. It'd be good if they go back that far.